Aloha, everyone. My name is Nancy. I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. My home group is now the Monday night Al-Anon St. Bonaventure's in Clayton, California. And for anyone who doesn't know where that is, that's in East Bay, about 30 miles east of San Francisco. This evening, we're very privileged to have a speaker who's we've been able to bring in, and I've had the pleasure of listening to her speak. I've only been able to meet with her briefly, but as a speaker, she's phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. And I found that listening to her story, again, is my story, as it is most members of Al-Anon and any other fellowship. It's a journey. This is a journey of recovery. And I think one of the things that really touched me the most and will touch all of you as you listen to her speak tonight was the enmeshment as family members and loved ones we become with our alcoholics. And we don't know, you know, where we begin and where it ends. And it becomes an enmeshment of pain. And also the experiences of obsession. The obsession, the alcoholic is obsessed with alcohol. We are obsessed with the alcoholic. The fear, the anger, and the pain that she spoke of just really touched me. And I closed my eyes, and I was able to listen to her speak. I was laying in the sun and just in a most beautiful place in Keoho, and, you know, my higher power was with me. And like I said, her story is mine. And one of the amazing things is she also speaks of surrender and the solutions that recovery will give you and the miracles that can happen in this program. And like her, I've been able to experience miracles myself, and I've seen them, and we're all living miracles here. And being able to be in a place where we can be able to share those miracles. And so this evening, it's my... really my privilege to be able to introduce Bonnie, a member of Al-Anon, who has an incredible story. And no matter what program you're in, I'm sure it will touch you as it has touched me. So this evening, let's introduce Bonnie.
Hi, everybody. My name is Bonnie Allen, and I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. Oh, God, I've never been called a phenomenal speaker before. No pressure or anything. God. Well, I'm just thrilled to be here. I just really want to thank the committee for asking us. You know, we've been asked a couple other years, and we have not been available. So thank you for being persistent and keeping asking us. So it's great to be here. I think, you know, we're here when we were supposed to be here. Everybody has been so wonderful. We have Stan and Christy have been taking care of us. We arrived last week, and we've really grown, I've got to tell you. We've really grown. This is our first vacation when we haven't had to do everything. I don't know, you know, being married to an alcoholic, we usually have to see everything, do everything. I mean, you know, we're exhausted when we come home, you know. And we've really grown this year. We've really just relaxed, read a book. It's really neat. He had a couple obsessions. He usually gets an obsession on a trip. You know, he has to find something or buy something that we have to look in every store. And you know, I've grown because now I don't have to go with him on these trips, you know. I can just say, oh, go right ahead, you know. He was on his Hawaiian shirt, you know, obsession this time. And so I can just let him do it now, you know. I don't have to go crazy, you know. Anyway, there's hope. There's hope. So I just thank you so much for having us here. It's just been, you know, it's just, I'm just so grateful. And I have to say I'm here not because I'm unique. I'm here because I'm typical. And I'm here sharing just because when I was new in Al-Anon, flowers, I was just told never to say no to an Al-Anon request. And from doing that, it has taken me to places and had me doing things I've been terrified to do. But it's just taken me and given me a world that is beyond anything I had planned. And so all I can say to you is when you are asked to do something, just don't say no. You know, it's like we want God to help us in our recovery, but we didn't want him to help us to do that in our recovery, you know. So anyway, just let go, and it has you going to wonderful places like this, meeting wonderful people. I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I love alcoholics. I just do. I didn't always say that, I'll tell you that. But I am just attracted to them all the time. They walk down the street, and I don't know, they just pick me out. I think they just come up and start talking to me. They do. And anyway, I just feel so at home at a meeting. I can't think of a place I'd rather be. I was raised in a normal alcoholic home. Yeah. And I was raised in Cleveland, Ohio, like George. George and I have survived Cleveland. Yeah. And I always used to think if you came from Cleveland, you'd have my problems too, you know. And my father owned a bar, and my father got drunk, and I sort of knew, you know, he smashed up the cars or did what he did, but I never could figure out my mother's problem. She was the maniac to me. I really never liked my mother. And I learned all those things that you learn in an alcoholic home, which are really survival techniques. And, you know, when my mother didn't want to talk to the neighbors if we'd be out doing the gardening, she would just pull me by the collar and we'd hide in the bushes. And I just thought that's how, you know, when you didn't want to talk to someone, you just hid from them. And we did all sorts of things like that. And everything is a secret. I don't know about you, but it's a house of secrets. And no matter what, you know, I was a stutterer as a kid, and I really couldn't speak it for the first year when I first came to Al-Anon. But I know it was from being at home where no matter what I said, it was the wrong thing. You know, even when I go to visit my mom today, my mom who is 90 years old and has lived with alcoholism her whole life, everything is a secret, you know. I remember last summer I went to visit her, and I arrived on a Tuesday, and she said, call your aunt and tell her we're going to go for lunch. But don't tell her you arrived on Tuesday. Tell her you arrived on Sunday. And don't tell her we went to McDonald's for lunch. Tell her we went to wherever for lunch. I mean, like, everything is a secret. And so no matter what you said, it was always the wrong thing. And that's how my mother lives to this day. And so anyway, you learned those things, and I knew there was a problem, but I didn't know it was alcoholism. That's what's normal, right? And anyway, I just knew I had to get out of that house. I was raised in a Polish Catholic family. Now, my husband is Irish Catholic, which is very different than Polish Catholic, right? Irish Catholic, they just have the priest over and get drunk together. But Polish Catholic is we believe everything they say. You know, absolutely everything. And it's grim. There's no fun. There are no laughs. And that's my background. And, you know, my mother said, if the nun says it's true, it's true. You just believe her, right? And so I had those nuns, and I had my parents, and I had Cleveland, and I knew there were problems. And so my mother, thank God, sent me to ballet class, and that was my escape. It was a place where I felt safe. I didn't have to worry about what was happening at home. I seemed to have a natural talent for it, and I didn't have to worry about my mother screaming and my father smashing up the cars. And the only way sort of a Polish Catholic girl leaves Cleveland in those days was my mother had a nice little Polish Catholic boy all picked out for me. But I told her I was going to go to New York and give my dancing career a try. And so I told her I was going for 3 months. And in my heart, I knew I was leaving forever. And so I packed up my bags, and they gave me $50, and off I went to New York City. And I was terrified and thrilled at the same time. And when I would get really afraid, I'd call my mother, and my mother talked in a shrill voice. You know, Sean always says Al-Anon's lips disappeared. Her lips long disappeared. And she just talked in this screaming voice all the time. And I knew I couldn't go back. I knew I couldn't, no matter how scared I was, I had to stay there. And, you know, also when I left Cleveland, I thought I was leaving my problems behind me. I thought it was my parents and my mother and the Catholic Church. And I thought I was leaving them all back there. And little did I know is that I took them all with me. I packed them in my bag and took them with me. And I was in New York a while, and in one of these shows I was doing, I was a dancer, and in walked this tall, charming Irishman. Yeah. And he was just adorable. I didn't know anybody who wasn't Polish until I moved to New York, so let me tell you, it was a culture shock. But anyway, he was adorable, and he was the life of the party, and he was just good-looking and witty and bright. And, you know, there's that moment when you recognize potential, you know. I just knew with a little work he'd be perfect. And, you know, and I have to tell you, before I left, my parents had a particularly vicious fight one night, and it was a vow that I made to myself that I was getting out of that house, and I made a vow to myself that I was never going to go out with or marry anybody who drank. When I met Sean and we started going out, you know, I remember that vow I made this day. I remember what I was wearing and where I was standing in my parents' house. But when I met Sean, I just knew that life with me would be so wonderful. And all he really needed was somebody to take care of him, right? And what I, you know, what I got was my solution. That's what I really thought he was, you know. I loved, who was it, Gene said yesterday, I hitched my wagon to his star. And that's exactly what I did. And I did not like where that wagon took me. And I didn't even like where it took me in sobriety sometimes, let me tell you. But anyway, so we got together, and, you know, when I told my parents I was marrying Sean, they told me, my mother took me aside, and she said, you know, he's nothing but a drunk and a con artist. And I later found out she was absolutely right. But, but, you know, because of that, you know who I had to eliminate. I had to eliminate them out of my life. And so the two of us got together, and we were touring in a show, and and I can't say, you know, the alcoholic is obsessed with alcohol, and for me, the Al-Anon is obsessed with the alcoholic. I can't tell you where the obsession for me began. You know, and I look back today, and, you know, my dance career, I love dance. It was such a passion of mine. I mean, from the time I was a little kid, I mean, 3 years old, I wanted to be a dancer. I wanted to move to New York, and I had actually done it. You know, I was in New York, and I was on the stage doing my dream. And I met this guy, and in a New York minute, I dropped it. He wanted to move to L.A. We were in a show, so we moved to L.A., and I never danced again. And it's just, when I think back now, you know, what that obsession does. You know, I don't know when, how quickly it became that obsession, but it was. And all my dreams, all my passions, all my loves, I didn't even give it a moment's thought. I just absolutely dropped it. We moved to L.A. and got married. And in those days, there wasn't any work for dancers in those days. You know, that was in the early 70s. And so I never danced again, never gave it a thought, never thought he should go to work either. I don't know why. He was the actor. He was the, you know, the artiste. You know, he was so different. But we had to eat, so I went and got a job, and I, you know, couldn't do anything really except dance. That's all I had ever done. So I lied about all the things. I went on a job interview. I, you know, lied away. And if they gave me a test, they didn't hire me because I couldn't type or take shorthand or anything. But there were so, you know, some of those people who did not test me and gave me jobs, and I was terrible. I got fired all the time, all the time. And every time I got fired, I humiliated myself a little more, lost a little more of my self-respect, and I would go home and tell Sean what happened, and he would get out the L.A. job want ads and look for other jobs for me to go on. And that's the way it went. And I went from job to job, in the insanity. And I didn't think there was anything wrong with that. I really didn't. You know, our life was not a dramatic story. Sean didn't go to jails. He didn't go to hospitals. Our life was just the day-to-day insanity of living with alcoholism. When you don't know what the problem is and you're trying to solve it. And we have a wonderful piece of literature called Understanding Alcoholism and Understanding Ourselves. And what it is I thought, those of us who love alcoholics think it's something that I didn't do. You know, that I wasn't up to enough, that I wasn't pretty enough, that I wasn't educated enough, that I wasn't a good enough cook, that there was something wrong with me, that I wasn't a good enough wife, that he drank. And I always thought, you know, if I were somehow different, he wouldn't drink. And I tried doing all that. I did. I tried becoming a gourmet chef. And Sean always says he was a functioning alcoholic. He had a wife who worked. And, and that's what it was. And our world gets very small, very, very small. We lived in this little house up in the Hollywood Hills. And Sean didn't hide his drinking. He just hid the house in which he drank in. That's really what it was. It was just the two of us. Our world gets very small, and we had no family, no friends, and just the drinking buddies, you know. And anybody who drank had to be really drinking worse than Sean, because I remember, you know, our friend Peter would go home, and he really had a drinking problem. You know, we could sit and really talk about him. Peter really had a bad problem. And, you know, aren't my insanity, you know, we talk about the denial of the alcoholic, but the denial of the Al-Anon. I remember toward the end of, right before we got to the program, I went and had my cards read. And I remember this woman looked at me very seriously. She looked at my cards and she looked at me and she said, you know, someone very close to you has an extreme problem with alcohol. And I thought, who could be? I knew my father had a problem, but I wasn't close to him. I mean, you know, talk about the insanity. I mean, it's just unbelievable, our denial. And Sean used to always say, you know, Bonnie, stop being so uptight. Just have a glass of wine and a Valium, and you'll be fine. That was his solution, and it just never worked. And so that was our life. It wasn't really dramatic. It was just insane. I can't tell you when I stopped answering the phone. I can't tell you when I stopped going to the door. I had my little place that I hid that my mother taught me. And the anger and feeling so alone, you know, that absolutely nobody understood what I was going through. And we had a particularly vicious fight one night, one of those fights that I couldn't understand how Sean could just go to sleep. I had no idea about passing out, you know. And I was up all night, and we had said some awful things to each other. And he got up the next morning, and I realized I really got afraid now, because this is more than my not loving him enough, because suddenly I realized he didn't remember anything that had happened the night before. And I really got afraid. It wasn't long after that I was down in Orange County helping somebody that didn't need my help. I helped everybody. I had an answer for the world. And Sean called and said he joined AA. Now, I'll tell you, the only thing I knew about AA was what my mother used to say, because she used to threaten my father back in Cleveland. And she used to threaten to send him to the double A men. And that's what she called them. And when she said the double A men, she did not say it nicely at all. It was like really to stoop to the bottom, you know. And so I thought, oh, my God, you know, what has he gotten me into now? Because I don't know about you, but I don't know where I ended and Sean began. You know, if he had a good day, we had a good day. If he was in a good mood, we were in a good mood. You know, when he joined AA, I thought we joined AA. Like, what did he get me into now? You know, and so I came back in town. He had a week of sobriety and he was definitely different. And he was talking about God, and these people had this look in their eye, and I thought, it's another cult. You know, what has he gotten me into? And he told me there was a place for me called Al-Anon. And I went to my first meeting, and I always, you know, I've always had my feelings confused. And I always thought I loved Al-Anon from the moment I walked in, but I really felt safe. That's what I really felt. I have, you know, we hear lots of times Al-Anons who say, gee, I'd never lived with alcoholism until I met the alcoholic. I had no idea what I was dealing with. We know I was born into alcoholism. My family is riddled with it. And I had no idea that was the problem until I walked into the doors of Al-Anon. And I think I was just surrendered. It was just so good to know that that's what the problem was, you know, just to name the problem. And then, of course, I thought, well, alcoholism is just too simple. You know, he's this artistic guy. He can't just be a drunk, you know. And that's where going to open AA meetings really helped me, because I found out he wasn't so unique. He was just a drunk like everybody else. And it was a wonderful feeling to know that I could label what the problem was. I'd like to tell you that we went to AA and Al-Anon, and everything was wonderful ever since. And that's just not life. Sorry to tell you that. I don't know where I thought I heard that recovery meant the absence of problems, too. So if you've heard that, sorry to dispel that for you, too. Because life happens. And if you're in this program long enough, and you're around long enough, life goes on. You're going to have health problems, family problems, children problems. Life happens. And thank God we've got each other. So now I have this sober guy, and I don't know if I liked him sober. You know, before he would just enter the room and entertain you, and now, you know, our only social life was AA parties, and he just went in the corner and ate all your food. So then I watched his eating, right? I mean, it's just real easy to watch their obsession with eating and sweets. And so I wasn't too sure about this, and I was told not to make any emotional decisions for the first 6 months in Al-Anon, and Sean was told not to make any in the first year, and I'm really grateful we had that suggestion, because I really didn't know what I wanted to do. I didn't know if I wanted to stay, if I wanted to go. I didn't know if I loved him or didn't love him, and I needed some time to get some to work on me, and Al-Anon says, start putting the focus on me. Now, I could tell you, he was my problem, you know. I remember he was going to AA meetings, and he would share that he paid the gas bill, and he'd practically get a standing ovation. And I was not too impressed with that. I mean, I was paying the gas bill for months and taking care of everything. And thank God for Al-Anon. You know, Al-Anons are not simply spouses of members of Alcoholics Anonymous. That is a misconception if that's what you think an Al-Anon is. An Al-Anon is somebody who goes to the Al-Anon program, who works the 12 steps and 12 traditions and the 12 concepts and is of service. And I am so grateful that I got with some really black belt Al-Anons who told me that he wasn't my problem, because I tell you, it was really easy to blame a drunk. It really is. I thought I looked good next to him, you know. But he got sobered up, and, you know, he looked better, he smelled better, he acted better, and I was the one that was starting to look crazy, you know. I was, when I arrived at my first meeting, Sean arrived in his Mercedes. I arrived in this beat-up Volkswagen that looked like a drunk's car. I used to wear these long sort of muumuus, and I had these babushkas on my hair, because I never got my hair done, and I was the mean one. And if you looked at the two of us, you would say, she is the one with the problem. You know, you could probably also say, I know why he drank living with her. So I had to start looking at me. And I'll tell you, it's been a journey of looking at me. I've been in the program all Monday. It will be 27 years I've been in Al-Anon. I never planned to be here this long, I'll tell you. I'll tell you, the longer I'm around, the less I know. Absolutely. You know, at 5 years, I knew everything. I had it all down path. But I tell you, now that I'm around longer, I have no idea. What's right for you, what's right for my husband, I can barely figure out what's right for myself. And it has been a journey. It's been a journey about finding out about me, about working the steps, being of service. I got to tell you, I blamed Sean for everything, and it was very hard for me to focus on myself. I really want him to turn into Prince Charming, And, you know, at 6 months, he didn't turn into Prince Charming. And I went and told my sponsor that, and she told me I hadn't turned into Snow White. And and that I had to start looking at me. You know, that first year, I was told not to expect any changes, really. I was just told to let him stay sober. And he was an AA, and they would take care of him, and that I should work on myself. And they told me, you know, once he had a year of sobriety, things would change. And so when he had that year of sobriety, I thought, okay, now it's time for him to turn into Prince Charming, and now it's time for him to make those amends to me in that step. And not a lot changed then either. But my sponsor did say, you know, alcohol is not the only thing that took away his dignity. You did too. And it's time that you started giving back some responsibility. Now, I didn't trust Sean with anything. So she said, there's something you've got to start turning over some responsibility. And she said, when you turn it over, you have to let go completely. So very hard words for an Al-Anon. And so I thought about it, and my sponsor is a very busy lady, and I thought she just will forget about this little suggestion. And 3 weeks later, she came and she said, well, Bonnie, have you thought of something you're willing to turn over to Sean? And I said, yes, I've given it a great deal of thought, and there's absolutely nothing that I trust him with. And she said, well, that won't work. There's got to be one thing you're willing to turn over. And so I came up with the laundry. I turned over the laundry to Sean. And a week went by and he didn't do the laundry. And 2 weeks went by and he didn't do the laundry. And I called my sponsor and I said, you know, these alcoholics, you ask them to do something and they never follow through. I could have told you this would have happened. And she said, I don't care. You know, in AA, they said, before you take that first drink, call somebody. She said, Bonnie, before you touch that laundry, call an Al-Anon. And 3 weeks went by, nothing was done, and, you know, my stomach is churning, and, you know, it's cascading out of the hamper, and called her and said, you know, he still hasn't done the laundry. And she said, I'll give you money for sheets and towels, but don't touch that laundry. And finally, there wasn't a thing clean anywhere. And he did the laundry. And it came out awful, just like I knew it would, right? And, you know, an incredible thing happened. It was the first time. You know these suggestions your sponsors make? That sounds so stupid, don't they? But out of that little suggestion that I was willing to take, it was the first time I gave Sean the dignity to do something in his time and his way. Because before that, there was my way and the wrong way. That's just the way it went. And now I found out that there's my way and there's Sean's way and there's Mary's way and there's Ken's way. And they're not right or wrong. Everybody just has their own way of doing things. It was the first time I had been consistent. Consistency is non-existent in an alcoholic home. Absolutely non-existent. Never follow through on everything. You know, I would ask Sean to do lots of things, and of course, you don't do it my way or fast enough. I ended up taking it back, and I ended up doing everything and resenting every moment of it. And I was a great martyr, and I was a great victim, and I was willing. I was a willing participant in all of those things. And strangely enough, it just absolutely shifted our relationship, and we started growing from there. And I've gotten involved in every area of service, and I got into working, and everything I've learned in Al-Anon, I've been able to take outside. You know, and I could, you know, we have that saying, let it begin with me. It was very hard for me to be loving to my husband. I was so angry for the mess he had gotten me into. It was very hard to see how I participated in it, you know. You know, I blamed him for that awful house up in the Hollywood Hills that we had that had no heat and no foundation. And I blamed him for years. My sponsor was so tired of hearing about it. She said, didn't you have to sign your name on that deed? Well, I forgot about that. All right. And I had to start looking how I had participated. You know, my solutions are always worse than my problems. I don't know about you, but I wanted a quick fix. I didn't want to feel the feelings. I didn't want to go through things, you know. When Sean was 5 years sober, you know, today I'm grateful when crises happen, not when they happen, when I'm on the other side of it. But lots of times God does for us what we can't do for ourselves. And when we were 5 years in the program, I came home from one of my regular meetings, and Sean told me that he had been arrested. And I thought, this is not what happens in sobriety, right? miracle for me happened. You know, you go to meetings and you hear the words serenity and compassion, and I thought, I will never feel that. You know, if I can just have a moment when my stomach isn't churning, I will be happy, but I'll never feel that. And for me, the miracle happened because Sean told me what had happened. And instead of saying to him, why are you screwing up my life? Why are you blowing up our marriage? I was able to look at him and say, I am so sorry that you have to hurt yourself so much. And that was a real miracle. Because, as I said, whatever happened to him happened to me. And suddenly it was a real pulling apart. I became my own person. I absolutely became my own person in Al-Anon. And the other incredible thing happened is I never came here for principles. But, you know, during the drinking, the alcoholic would do something unacceptable. And I would say to Sean, you know, the next time this happens, I'm out of here. I'm not going to put up with this crap. And, of course, the next time always did happen. And so I moved the boundary, and I would say, okay, now the next time something happens, you know, you keep moving the boundary, and suddenly, after this incident, there was no moving the boundary. And I went to my sponsor, and I talked about what I wanted in a marriage to stay there. And I did a lot of writing. I had a whole list of how I wanted him to change, I'll tell you. And she said, no, you can't give him a whole list like that. What is really important for you to stay married? And for me, and I'm sure everybody comes up with their own what is necessary, the absolute basics. And for me, it's fidelity and loyalty. And that's what I went back to Sean and said, if I can have fidelity and loyalty one day at a time, I will be glad to stay married. And if not, I have to leave. And I'll tell you, that's a real miracle. That is a real miracle because, I tell you, when we first got to this program, my fear was that he would leave me. And, you know, I look back in those drinking days. I had so little self-worth. I would look at him in his wingback chair, and we still have that wingback chair. It's been recovered a few times. And he would be drunk, and I would say to myself, Bonnie, what are you complaining about? You know, he's good-looking. He's bright. He's got all this potential. So he drinks a little. Be grateful. Be grateful you've got him. And that just shows you where I was, what I thought I deserved, which wasn't very much, you know. My working on my self-esteem. You know, there's so much talk about setting boundaries sometimes up in Al-Anon and probably other programs too. But for me, I really don't have to walk around setting my boundaries as my insides have changed. And as my self-worth has grown on the inside, events that happen, automatically, it becomes acceptable or unacceptable. It's like I don't have to go around making those boundaries anymore if I listen to what's right for me. It's been an incredible journey. And as I said, it's not always been wonderful. We've had great moments and we've had awful moments. We have just gone through a challenging 5 years. We had lots of... promise, we moved from Southern California up to Canada. You know, I have to tell you my worst fear, too, when Sean was drinking. He never became a U.S. citizen. He was always a Canadian. My worst fear was that he would do something awful and get deported to Canada. And, of course, they'd have to deport me, too, right? So my worst fear was living in Canada. So here I am. Watch out. I'm living in Vancouver now. And it's okay. It's all right. I still miss the States. And I still miss being home, but it's been a wonderful journey for me. When I moved from Southern California, an Al-Anon friend of mine said, you know, there's a meeting in Chicago called We Don't Care How You Do It in Southern California. Yeah. I know a lot of people feel that way. Northern California particularly doesn't feel that way, I'll tell you. You know, the Al-Anons have this convention, you know, our area divided north and south. It used to be one, and we divided north and south. And I don't know who came up with the idea that we should have this north-south convention, Al-Anon. Well, I'll tell you, it was not fellowship, love, and service. I'll tell you, it was like the north against the south. It really was. They did not like the way things, and we did not like the way they did things. But anyway, they do it very differently in Canada, but they do it okay. And it's something for me to learn. It really is. So we had all these promises of, not promises, all these hopes and dreams, you know. And I guess you get to the point where we're talking about ducks in a row. I thought, oh, you know, we've got our relationship together and family relationships had mended and financially we were going, things were going well. And I thought, now, you know, all my ducks will be in a row here. You know, we'll be in Canada and Sean will have a great business. And you know, your ducks are never in a row. There's always one that's a problem. Always one, you know. And I remember sharing not too long ago at a convention and talking about there's always a duck that's out. And Peggy Martin, who's one of my wonderful AA heroes, you know, she said to me, you know, Bonnie, I like your duck story because it's true. Your ducks are never in a row. But she said, I've got some bad news for you. They're not your ducks. At all. And I'll tell you, that's a hard one. It really is hard. I hate that. I absolutely hate it. But, you know, my life is really none of my business. And I'll tell you, all my what I have planned in my life today is not what I thought it was going to be at all. And it's better. It's absolutely better than I thought it would be. We had health problems. We've had financial problems. We downsized, which is Sean's way of saying we went broke. But and we've had a teenager and gone through that. We have a great kid, and I don't know if she'll be an alcoholic or marry an alcoholic or be both. I mean, I don't know. She certainly likes to party, and she's partying all through Europe right now. She said she's looking at museums, but I know she's partying. And I guess through all of that is it's really developing a high relationship with your higher power, because there are going to be times in life when things happen, and thank God I have the program, but it's really sometimes just between you and God. And I think it's also looking at the people who've been around a long time. You know, I've had to share everything that's been going on in the program in my meetings. You know, sometimes you hear people, I usually hear people with, you know, long time in the program, and like they never had a problem. Everything was wonderful. I'm sitting there thinking, what am I doing wrong? My life is dribbling down my sleeve, you know? What am I doing wrong? Am I not working the program right or what? You know, and it's like, I need to hear people who even have time in this program that things are not going well, that we have challenges, that we have pain, that we have disappointment, that we have losses, and to reach out to those people who've been here a long time, because I have needed my home group and the people in the program just as much as when I was brand new to walk me through this, to walk me through my fears. And I don't know, whenever I'm faced with something new, it's back to step one for me. I don't have it all together here. I mean, you know, everything I've let go of has claw marks all over it. I mean, I just can't do it an easier way. I wish I could. But just because you've got time in this program does not mean you're going through pain, does not mean you're going through difficult times. And so we need to be here for each other. My life is filled with miracles, absolutely filled with miracles. I've got to tell you about my mother before I sit down, because my mother I hated. I hated my mother from the moment I was born. And when you start working these steps, I had to come to the amends step, and I knew I had to take care of my side of the street. I never wanted a relationship with my mother. I just wanted to be at peace with my part in it. And so now my mother still lives in Cleveland, and I started writing her a card. And I was just told to stay in touch with her. And so I got this generic card that couldn't say anything other than thinking of you. And I sent her a card. And I got my first card back from my mother. It was also a generic card, didn't say anything, because she disowned me when I married Sean, didn't speak to me for years, right? And it was signed Mrs. Jessie Lapka. And that's how we began our relationship. And over the years, I would get another card, and it was, you know, another generic card thinking of you, and it was signed Sincerely, Mother, you know. And whenever I'd call her, she would piss me off all the time, and just I would react to her, no matter what she said. that I hang up the phone and say, I don't need this in my life. I don't even know why I bother, you know, except I was told to be the best daughter that I knew how to be. And so that was keeping in touch with her. And I would go to visit her. And, you know, I have to tell you, as much as I hated my mother, by the time I walked into the doors of Al-Anon, I have to tell you, I was a carbon copy of her. I fought with every fiber of my being not to be like her. My mother did not know how to talk to you, and she still doesn't. My mother cannot say, I'm so glad to see you. When I get off the plane to see her, and she'll say, oh, you're wearing jeans. Didn't know you wore jeans, you know. Or she'll say, oh, you're here for a week. If you're coming for a week, why bother coming at all? And I used to think, why do I bother come at all, you know? But, you know, now I know she just doesn't, you know, that's the way I communicated, too. I couldn't expose my feelings because now I know when my mother says that, what she's really saying to me is, Bonnie, I miss you so much. I really wish you'd come more often. I really wish you would stay. She doesn't know how to say that. We are the fortunate ones who learn how to say that here in meetings, you know. My mother cooks for you. That's what my mother does. She can't say, I love you. She doesn't know how to do those things. My mother still lives with all, you know, she has two sisters. That's all that's left in her family, and they're full-blown drunks who make her crazy. And today my mother is one of my heroes, absolutely one of my heroes. And it wasn't until about 15 years in the program that, and doing all these little baby steps to just sending her a card and sending her a Mother's Day card was really hard. I couldn't find anything that was gushy-gushy. It just was Happy Mother's Day. But about 15 years in the program, I got this card, and it was to most wonderful daughter, and it was signed Love, Mom. And that's the miracle of this program. It really is. I still didn't love my mother, though. I had a relationship, and we really can't say very much, you know. She really can't handle any kind of feelings. And I thought I was happy with this, you know, until one visit not too long ago, she came up to Canada. And we just had a really wonderful time. And, you know, she hasn't changed at all. She is still a major pain in the ass, let me tell you. She's got 90 years of anger under her skin, let me tell you, that just can explode at any time, you know, that she doesn't know what to deal with. But you know what? I've become safe to be around. I've become safe. You know, when she says those things to me, I don't have to, you know, jump down her throat with some sarcastic remark. I know what she's trying to say to me. And because I've become safe to be around, she started being able to say those things to me. You know, I've been share around podiums how proud I am of my mom. My mother is 90 years old and got her first job at 69 years of age. And she still works full-time as a chef in a restaurant in Cleveland. And she is self-supporting through her own contributions. She has her own house. She shovels the snow before she goes to work in the wintertime. And my mother is fabulous. She is truly one of my heroes today. She absolutely blossomed when my father died. It's interesting, huh? I thought, God, we Al-Anons can't blossom when our alcoholics die. We better do it now, right? Anyway, she is just one of my heroes, and I realized I never told her that. And last year I wrote her this long letter and just to tell her how proud I am of her, of what she has accomplished, how far she's come, of what she's, you know, done in her life. And I send it to her, and she sent me a letter back. No, she didn't send me a letter. She called me, and all she could say was, I got your letter. And it was very nice, and that's all she could say. And, you know, it's a real miracle. I didn't want a relationship with my mother. I really didn't, and I didn't even plan on loving my mother. So all I can say is don't leave before the miracles happen. As I said, you know, we've had some challenges the past 5 years that affected our marriage again. I think we go through hard times, good times, bad times. And the message for me, again, is he is not my problem. God, would I like to blame him sometimes, too. I'd like to blame him for the business that failed and we had to sell the house. But, you know, I have to thank God for the things he gave me, the things he's taken away, and the things he's left. We have a wonderful life. We have, I guess, how I feel about myself is the most important thing. I have such a confidence in who I am. I'm embarking on a great career that I think I have finally gotten out of my own way and let God let God decide where I should go instead of me. You know, sometimes my worst defects of character are still self. I want what I want when I want it, you know. I know God's in charge of my life, but is he going to give me life according to my standards, you know. And that's basically, I want what I want when I want it. And so I think I have gotten out of the way, and I know God wants for me much more than what I have for myself. My view is very limiting. If you know, they say that whole thing. When I was new, they told me if I wrote out what I wanted, I would sell myself short. And let me tell you, I would have sold myself short, because what I have today is just beyond anything. So please don't leave before your miracle. We're all really blessed to be here. We're all been given a wonderful gift. You know, all this, I've been listening on the TV, I'm sure you heard about Robert Downey, and you say, why are we the lucky ones? You know, if not him, there are lots of alcoholics and Al-Anons out there still crazy, absolutely still crazy. And we're the lucky ones with the gift. So thank you so much for giving my gift to me, for sharing it with me, for being there for me for all of these years. I did not plan to be around here this long. But thank you so much. Thanks.